financing. Second...
Is that in statute, Joe?
The 60% limitation is, and as administrative practice, I believe the department says, go talk to a bank first, come to us, and we'll try and fill a gap, if there is one. And second, many businesses, I think, because the interest rate on these is well below market rate, find it very attractive to pursue. And we asked the bankers who co-loaned the 60%, we did a survey of all of the bankers who made OBDF loans, a good proportion of them told us that they would have made the full amount of the loan if the borrower didn't have recourse to the Oregon Business Development Fund. And that because OBDF provided a lower cost of financing, and I'm not saying this is true in all cases, but it clearly is in a number of cases, that they financed part of it at their market rate and enabled their client to participate in OBDF at the lower rate.
Mr. Chairman, I don't completely agree with that. I think you will find that the questions refer not just to whether they would make the loan or not, but to terms of the loan. And you will find that banks, that many of these small businesses that are manufacturing businesses need help with long-term debt. And they can't get long-term debt from the banks. So the banks would be able to say, yes, we'll give you a loan. In some cases, they'd be able to say, we'll give you a short-term loan, but not a long-term loan. And I think if you look at the research that Mr. Courtwright is referring to, you'll find that. Certainly there are instances and where I think a couple of bankers have said, yes, we might make loans, but I believe they were referring to short-term loans, not the long-term loans that we're allowed to do under OBDF.
Mr. Chairman, I guess at this point I'm beginning to feel a little uncomfortable because as co-chair of the committee, this is a substantive issue and the committee spent 2 weeks on this issue. And while I'm sure Mr. Lohman sees probably a greater picture as it relates to women and minority loans and the OBDF, I would have to stand in support of the committee's two-week-long work in terms of this issue, because it did work with the bankers and the department on this issue. And so there's obviously a philosophical difference.
I appreciate that, Representative Carter, and we're not going to make any philosophical changes. We're going to go with the action of the T&E committee. On the other issue, then, that has to do with the ceiling for county, if you'll discuss that for us.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I believe you're referring to the on the printed A in gross 313, the top of page 3, the 20% limitation, 20% of the value of the fund. So now that cap on what a single county can get fluctuates with the value of the fund, and given the amount that you've appropriated, I think that will bring the capitalization of the fund up to around $9 million. 20% of that would be about $1.8 million. And so that would be the limit on any county. Multnomah County is the only county coming close to that, I believe, as Mr. Lohman noted. And then the committee gave carved an exemption in that provision for economically and socially disadvantaged businesses. And I think Mr. Lohman's amendment on that is entirely appropriate, where he switched to emerging small business. And I think that's consistent with what the committee did. And the committee did consider giving an exemption also for those very small loans, those under $50,000 loans, but decided not to. So it chose only to make that exemption for that loan.
And the result of that, Mr. Chairman, is that there is effectively no set aside for loans under $50,000 for Multnomah County once they reach this cap, which they're close to reaching. And if that's what the committee wishes, that's fine. I just wanted to be sure that was raised to your attention.
I must tell you, as chair of the committee and whose community would be affected greatly by that, I accepted the committee's work on that issue. It's not that I agree as chairperson, but as, and I think all of you understand the work of the chairs, my way of doing things is trying to come to consensus on something. So I was even overruled on that. But I do want you to know that it would negatively affect women and minority businesses in terms of this limitation, as Mr. Lohman is pointing out.
Well, Representative Carter, we can, in this committee, we can make substantive changes if it's okay with the chairs of the substantive committee.
And I mean, that's
if you desire us to make that change, I think we could probably try to do that here.
Right. I think, Mr. Chair, what I would feel more comfortable doing is to Senator Hill, along with Senator Cohen and Representative Agron, who's our business finance people, who worked on this issue, and I would have to poll our committee and the co-chair. I really don't feel comfortable making that decision either.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanneman.
Well, Representative Carter, that takes time to go back to do that, and I guess maybe we have some time, but not much. And my concern is if it doesn't work for the people you want it to work for, that's the whole intent of your bill. And what I hear you and Mr. Lohman saying is that you're agreeing that it's not going to work the way you want it to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanneman, the issue came up with our committee in terms of if you're referring to gender-based and sex-based, and racially-based communities, then it would not work. But my information is that if you're talking about emerging small business, then that it would work. But when you open up the issue of emerging small business, you open up a larger community of people, so therefore there's a competitive basis there for women and minorities to have to compete with, even in the area of emerging small business. So,
Representative Carter, the provisions that you're talking about on page 3, is a split vote among the T&E committee, and were you in disarray on it? Or
lines 1 through 5?
Yeah.
I think I was probably the only person, who went to this position, so I joined the gang. And not the department, where the department was helping see it all the time, but the committee decided that this would be the direction in which we would go on this issue.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just clarify, if the committee were to accept the language that was proposed in my amendment to make it emerging small businesses, I think that would satisfy Representative Carter's concern, because that would then be consistent with Senate Bill 3001. The additional question I was asking was about the other set aside, the 25% set aside for loans under $50,000. And the reason I raise that is because if you don't do some similar exemption from the cap as we have done for the 15% set aside, then you have effectively no set aside for loans under $50,000 in Multnomah County. That doesn't preclude us from making loans under $50,000, but there's no set aside. And the result of that is the set-aside that we now have, which is building up, would not be able to be applied to the Multnomah County area. And you may end up with even a larger amount of set-aside building up, sitting in a fund, collecting interest, but not doing much good. Now, we are trying to get those loans under $50,000 out. But as I testified to the T&E committee, it's hard to do that because manufacturing businesses generally need larger loans. And the T&E committee agreed with that to the extent that they said from now on, it shouldn't be 25% of set aside for loans under $50,000. It should be 17%. And that's what appears in Senate Bill 313. So I just raise that because if you don't exempt that set aside from this cap provision, as you have done the other set aside, you end up with more money sitting in that set aside not being effectively used.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I don't think there's any disagreement here for a very simple reason. Emerging small businesses under the department's definition, which is the same definition in 3001, is businesses with annual sales of less than $2 million, under 20 employees, and so on. It's very unlikely that a business that was bigger than that would want a loan of less than $50,000. So what I'm saying is that small loan set aside that we're talking about is maybe completely synonymous with or even more restrictive than the emerging small businesses. Chances are that if an emerging small business comes in, it's going to be using all the businesses that would get an under $50,000 loan that I think we're all worried about, or that Mr. Lohman in particular is worried about excluding, would be businesses that would in all likelihood be emerging small businesses and would be able to get the loan under that category. Moreover, those extremely small businesses are going to be ones that would also fall, those emerging small businesses also includes the category of retail and service businesses, which become eligible if the department is unable to make loans to enough emerging and small businesses, which further improves your ability to make those very small dollar amounts of loans. So, as a practical matter, I think it will work itself out. I don't know that Dave's thought that through. We haven't had a chance to talk about this.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to spend, we're spending more time on this probably than it's worth, but I disagree with that. I don't think it'll work out the same. It won't resolve itself because the emerging, two reasons. One, the emerging small businesses have to be certified, have to go through a government hassle to get certified. There are some businesses that aren't going to want to do that, that might qualify for the under $50,000 loan category, some businesses in Multnomah County. And I've forgotten my other point.
Well, would you both take the Economic Development Department proposed amendments and look on page 2, section 12? Does that accomplish what we're discussing here?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, that's really a separate issue. This doesn't give them ability to waive any of the statutory requirements that apply to those loans.
Okay. I think a subcommittee would like to solve this problem if you could come to an agreement on how to do that.
Mr. Chairman, if you could give us some time to discuss this matter, the three of us, and then maybe...
Any reason not to be a disconception for that? It's a minor.
Then maybe what we can do is to come back and talk to you if you...
Sounds good. Monday?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine.
Send
I guess I would like to understand what are the fiscal issues in these bills. We haven't had much discussion of that yet, so I'm still kind of curious what are the fiscal issues that they were sent
out
for.
Mr. Chairman, there is the one fiscal issue that's very clear that you haven't addressed yet, and that is the administrative costs.
Okay.
That 313, as it's written, wipes out our ability to... It doesn't have any provision for administrative costs.
But you've got those amendments in here.
No, we don't. Oh, well, excuse me. Well, in this, what I handed to you, again, they're in there in the sense that this does not include the deletion in Senate Bill 313 of the statute that now provides for administrative costs. By not mentioning it, it continues the existing statute.
Okay.
That's Section 5 of 313, as I see it, deletion of Sub A. Is that the one we're talking about?
Line 6 through 10.
On page 5, line 6 through 10.
So, Mr. Chair, I hear that if we were to reinstate that language and then refer it back to T&E for substantive kinds of discussion, or you're down, aren't you?
Yeah, we're down.
I think we can make that if Representative Carter can get the okay from the other co-chair we do that. And so we'll put our discussion of Senate Bill 314 and the merge of Senate Bill 313 into that over to Monday. You come back with all of the amendments ready then, and we'll pass it right out.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll schedule a time on Monday to do that.
Mr. Chair, I would hope that in order to resolve the conflict, that the department is involved in your discussion.
Right, the three of us are going to talk.
Okay.
At least the four of us, because Bob is.
The other Senate members you referred to, I hope might also be in a discussion with the department so that they understand what's the department's problem that they allege.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, we can really go out and talk about this issue now if you want to get back to this later on today.
Okay, we might try that after Capital Construction goes away. Then we'll close the work session on that subject, and if somebody can find Mr. Horry, we'll bring up some other bill.
We have about a 5 minute smoke break.
5 minutes?
5 minute smoke break.
5 minute smoke
recess.
Break. We're recessed.
All right.
Do you agree?
No. You don't need a motion.
First he said yes, and then he got scared.
He's got one head to help
out.
This is all on tape. This is all on tape. Mr. Jones is passing out some amendments.
Mr. Chairman,
the budget note.
The budget for the Economic Development Department, Senate Bill 5501, we earlier described to you when you considered House Bill 3075, the changes relating to House Bill 3075 that would be incorporated into this bill. And we'll make those correct changes. In addition, that you discussed, and I think that there may not have been a motion, but generally understanding that there would be two other limitation extensions for the 1987-89 biennium of those uncommitted resources in the Regional Strategies Fund and in the Strategic Reserve Fund. Mr. Marsh has prepared a budget report draft again for you to look at, and we'll be working on this afternoon finish up both this budget report and the 3075 budget report. I have prepared a budget note as an addition to this budget report I'd like to ask you to consider. And that budget note relates to the responsibilities of the Economic Development Department in their administration of the House Bill 3075 program. I'll read that budget note if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
For all programs not otherwise provided for by law, the Economic Development Department shall establish by administrative rule selection, accounting, and performance criteria and procedures necessary for it to meet its fiduciary responsibilities to the State of Oregon. There's an additional budget note that I had lost track of that I'd like to read to you as well. It's unrelated.
Go ahead.
Funds provided in this appropriation measure for auditing and performance evaluation shall not be expended until a work plan has been prepared and submitted to the Emergency Board for its approval.
Any discussion?
Just that I would move the adoption of those two budget notes.
Senator Bradbury moves the adoption of the amendments to Senate Bill 5501 and the budget notes as brought to us on a sheet of paper just identified as amendments to Senate Bill 5501. Any discussion? Any objections? No order. Senator Bradbury.
I would move Senate Bill 5501 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bradbury moves Senate Bill 5501 as amended by the subcommittee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, sure. Call the roll.
Just a split second.
Senator Bradbury.
Well, we have been over this before a long time ago, and I don't.
doesn't require any change other than to make sure. We had discussed some of the additional expectations or latitude that we might have regarding some of the work that the agency is doing in tourism, and I think the understanding as much as any is that there's nothing that prohibits some further return as it relates to, and I wouldn't want to have it described contrary to this, that should there be opportunities that exceed our horizon of knowledge at this moment, that they assure and advise us of where those might be. I'm thinking of any kind of campaigns that might be the tourism division may want to become involved in, that we do not want to discourage the agency from giving us an opportunity to provide or to participate in those discussions. There's not a specific reference to that, but I think pretty well understood as we discussed the budget.
Any additional discussion? Not the clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bradford.
Aye.
Senator Handy.
Aye.
Representative Cronin.
Aye.
Representative Sell.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Hanneman and Senator Bradbury, I believe it's your turn to be carriers.
Fine.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanneman.
I will slow this down again, but on 3075, after brief discussion with Mr. Jones, what we did was create two more accounts that I guess I'm not sure you, Ms. Chair, intended to do, and I don't think I did, in 3075. When we moved the two $500,000 amounts up, Mr. Jones has to write that language, creating two more accounts. I didn't talk to the department, but I'm not sure. They want two soft accounts mixed with the hard ones, with the dollars that are already there. I was wondering if you had any objection as the soft money's moved into the traditional money accounts. It'd be my preference that it be the same kind of money that's already there, and not create two more and confuse the whole thing from a technical and financial standpoint.
I have no preference one way or the other, Representative Hanneman, but
would we then?
I think we've already written that into the record that we'd do that.
I would hope that we'd change that direction and work that out so that we don't have to have two other accounts.
Oh, then I guess you're making a motion to do that.
I would if it's permissible with you to reopen the issue of 3075 to do that.
We'll see if there's any feeling for that. Representative Hanneman moves that we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 3075. Any discussion?
For that purpose. Only.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
Senator Handy?
Aye.
Representative Hanneman?
Aye.
Representative Sell?
No. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I appreciate that. And I would move then that the two transfers previously referred to on this date during our work session on 3075, that the $500,000 into the strategic reserve and the $500,000 into regional strategies be of like funds as with the funds that are already there. I'm not sure that's right.
And no longer designated as sub B, whatever it was.
Everybody understand the motion. I won't read it into record. Okay. We'll have to go by what recording on the tape. Any objection? Not so ordered. Well, we have the 3075 opened up. I wasn't going to do this to accomplish it. But I'd like Mr. Lohman to come up, and some of the members of the audience had some questions about the statements at regard to regional strategies. Need to tell us that what we were talking about during the break.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, David Lohman with the Economic Development Department. I believe the discussion revolved around whether if five members of the 8-county Oregon Tourism Alliance were to decide that they wanted to select among their projects a project that really wasn't physically located in their county, but rather in one of the other three counties that are part of the alliance, whether that would be viewed favorably by the department. The answer is yes.
Thank you. Senator Bradbury.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3075 to the full committee with due pass recommendation as amended.
Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
This is the last time.
I'm pretty sure it's the last time.
Just curious.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Representative Hanneman?
Aye.
Representative Sella?
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 148.
Do we have any food?
I have no idea. We got chicken and barbecue ribs.
I mean, they do.
Let's go after we do this.
There's one other.
Senate Bill 148 is a water resources bill, and essentially provides authority for the department to establish a fee and a limited license for the use of surface water. There is an agency representative in the audience, Ms. Bev Hayes, who can address the technical aspects of the bill. In addition to that, there is interest by some parties to a proposed amendment, SB 148-A4, and there are individuals also in the audience prepared to address that amendment.
If we could have the Water Resources Department come up and tell us why we need this bill. Briefly.
Okay. Bev Hayes, Water Resources Department.
I'll briefly tell you what the bill does and then tell you the problem we're trying to address. The bill allows people to obtain a limited license for certain small uses of water, which are listed here in the bill. The bill further states that the limited license shall be subordinate to other permitted uses, including in-stream water rights. It allows the commission to set a lower fee for a limited license. And it also puts a 90-day limit on the license with one extension allowed. The problem is this. We often have to process uses of water like road watering, road maintenance, road construction that are temporary in nature, sporadic. Don't use a lot of water, and it's very time-consuming and costly both for us and the applicant to try to get a water right. Oftentimes, if it's something like road watering from year to year, the place will change, and as you know, water rights are attached to a place of use. In addition to paying the regular fees, they would be required to hire a certified water right examiner to go out and survey their use. And we think really what we need here is some kind of simplified process for those folks so that they can stay within the law. What usually happens is they don't bother to get a water right, and then we don't really have a lot of ability to enforce or control the uses. So this bill really is meant to create a simplified process for those kinds of uses.